Hey, Style Roman fans, I'm your host, Mary Rectoris.
And I'm your co-host, Mila Taylor. Stellar Women shines a light on female leaders making their mark in tech.
Mila and I are super jazzed to be sitting down today with Kamika Martin.
Hey, Kamika, welcome.
Hey there. So happy to be here.
Happy to have you. You've been in the corporate world for about 16 years or so. So kind of looking at leadership and what you're doing with Better Insights, what are some of the biggest pitfalls you've seen companies and organizations make when it comes to selecting leaders and managers throughout the firms?
There is this concept of taking an independent contributor and advancing them to a managerial role without giving a lot of thought about the structure that's needed to help them be successful in those roles. The elements of success for an independent contributor really do expand beyond what they're used to when they step into a leadership role. So really providing some structured training, I think, is something that is lacking. That's sort of the feedback that I hear, sort of also the feedback from my own experience where, you know, there may be sort of different elements of what I do in the day-to-day that, hey, in general, if I had to do this, this is what I would do. But how do I then communicate that to, you know, someone who I'm now managing, who's going to bring a different set of skills, a different personality to the table? And I want to make sure that, you know, I'm able to navigate those conversations in a way that's going to be beneficial to that team member, to the organization, as well as, you know, presenting yourself as a leader that has a balanced approach.
Gotcha. So kind of digging into training, like what can organizations do to build that strong pipeline of leaders?
Developing an environment that focuses on retaining the talent that's in the organization through mentorship, as well as additional advanced learning opportunities. So whether it's professional development through bringing in someone to lead training sessions or offering opportunities to go out and meet others in the marketplace who are like them, bringing those individuals into the organizations for some lunch and learns, really just being intentional about providing opportunities for your employees to see what leaders look like and how different leaders approach things. I think that that's really going to be key. So having a structure that leadership really thinks about and being intentional about actually executing that and not letting it be an afterthought.
I also think it's cool because, you know, not everyone's going to automatically put their hand up and say, I'm the next leader. I think sometimes people need to be exposed to different kinds of leadership and kind of given the skills to believe in themselves and know that, hey, I can do this. So I really like that approach of kind of just like giving them the tools as well as exposing them to different styles and methods. And I think that that's probably really beneficial.
I think too, like something you mentioned earlier, like not necessarily giving your individual contributors the tools they need to succeed to be a leader. In your opinion, do you think there's certain people who are better suited for leadership? Do you think everybody can be a strong leader?
Having an understanding of yourself is going to be key so that you understand like where your boundaries are and how you function best. So anyone can really be grown into a leader. They can be nurtured into being a leader. But I think that that really does require a deft hand of your strengths and weaknesses from the perspective of knowing what your limitations are, as well as knowing where there are areas that you shine in, right? Because there are times where we might be mimicking certain behaviors because we think that those are the actions that are widely accepted within our organization versus sort of taking on the persona that is true to who you are, right? So, and I think that we find that a lot with women, right? A lot of organizations are male led. And so there's this sense that you have to take on that very masculine persona, even though that may not be your default. Just really understanding like who you are is going to be key. But I do think that there is an element of leadership in many people. And even though you may not see yourself as a leader, that doesn't mean that others don't see you as that.
For you, I mean, Mary and I have had the opportunity to speak to you before this, and we've kind of got the idea, like, for you, positivity is huge. And you give workshops on the importance of leading with positivity. So why is it important leaders to exude this quality? And if someone isn't necessarily, like, you know, glass half full type of person, what are tips you have for them?
I really am a strong advocate for positivity, because I think about how my actions or someone else's actions are going to impact others, right? And even if you may have a different perspective, whether it's glass half empty, I think really focusing on trying to see the good in what others are doing as a leader is going to be really key. Someone was communicating to me about a challenging situation. What are some of the words that they could use that would allow me to be more receptive to what they're saying? And I think about it from that perspective of if that communication was coming back to me, how would I want that communication delivered? So some of the tips that I would give someone to really harness some of that positivity is to always lead from the place of what is going well. So if you're thinking about, okay, when I'm looking at my team, here are the things I really need to work on. And if you're just harping on that, you're sort of missing the mark for, well, what are the things that my team is good at? And really focusing on playing to your strengths, because everyone is going to bring something to the table, and it really is going to be important for a leader to really draw out those characteristics from their team members in order for them to really perform at their best, right? So one of the tips that I always, whether it's my direct reports at Legility or even attendees of my Lead the Way Positively workshop, is really focus on the things that your team members do well and let that be the driver for how you communicate, because you're always going to be coming at it from a place of positivity when you're looking at this is what you do well, and this is because you do this well, this potentially is how you can transfer this skill set to the thing that you need to improve. That would be the perspective that I would offer to someone who is really looking to lean into positivity.
You said you have those that are aspirational leaders or those that are new to leadership. So kind of looking at those folks that are really new, what are some like go-to tips you would give someone that's new to management?
One of the things that we do at Legility for new team leads, new managers, is we offer a team summit. And during that summit, what we do is we go over the Clifton Strengths Assessment. So we have everyone take this assessment beforehand. It really kind of sort of shows you where your strengths are across about 23 different areas. And this is really key to really kind of setting a baseline, because I think in theory, we generally have a sense of, okay, I'm good at doing this task, but we may not understand why. And it could just be that, okay, well, maybe you have a more of an inquisitive personality, so you approach things from the question perspective. You might be someone who is focused on solutions because you're goal-oriented. So always looking at, okay, well, how do I deliver for X? But those aren't the only things that you're good at. So really having doing an assessment of your skills, I would say, is really going to be key. The other element of that is also understanding your own coaching style. So as much as we're talking about new managers, the term is almost like a little antiquated, because you're really looking to coach those who are on your teams to do their jobs to the best of their abilities. And really understanding your coaching style is going to be key, and knowing how to apply those coaching styles depending on the personalities and the situations that you're dealing with. So I would say that those are sort of two real baselines to start from, especially with new managers. And the other side of that too is really having some good go-tos for what to say when you're in a difficult situation, like how to phrase things in a way that would allow the your team members to really hear what you're asking of them. Having the assessment of yourself also makes it easier for you to see, to kind of have that awareness of how those skill sets present in other people, and then being able to play to their strengths, because now you're sort of like taking that intelligence that you have and you can now apply it in a way that is more proactive, right? That's more intentional versus just kind of muddling through and trying to figure out what happens. Now you kind of like have a little bit in your arsenal that says, okay, these are some of the things that will be helpful to me as I go through my day to day.
That's super helpful.
That is some of the most practical, tangible advice. So thank you.
For those that might have been managers or coaches, should they retake this test to see how their skill sets changed, or what should they kind of do to make sure that they're, you know, continuing to improve?
We certainly at Legility, when we go through the process of hiring or promoting new managers, we actually have any of the seasoned managers also take the exam. Because doing the assessment, again, more likely than not, it's not going to really change, because who you are at your core is either just going to really just strengthen. You're going to lean into those strengths a little bit more, or your strengths just sort of shift a little bit, like, but they don't necessarily change per se. So I would definitely encourage seasoned managers to also consider doing those assessments. Also thinking about ways to layer some of the things that they have sort of like learned throughout their experience, right? So what are the things that you're doing well, right? And this is going to sound very similar to what I mentioned earlier, because the scale for assessing your coaching style is only going to shift insofar as where you are professionally, right? So if you're a junior, your experience is going to be a little bit different. So your frame of reference is going to be a little more narrow. And if you're more seasoned, your exposure to more your leadership is going to be a little bit more broad. As your experience starts to mature, you do need to do those assessments, because again, the thing that got you into that leadership role isn't necessarily the thing that you need to be doing today. So you might be thinking about it from the perspective of a little bit more along the lines of strategy, along the lines of delegation, and how you can move from not just the team that you're managing, but how those larger principles and or initiatives of the organization are actually being delivered on within your group. So yes, doing the strengths assessment is going to be key, but also the layering element becomes a lot more important, right? So we're talking about being able to identify your strengths and weaknesses, knowing what your coaching style is, knowing how to manage through difficult situations, but then think about that as a culmination when you're more seasoned, because now you're managing up, you're managing across, you're doing a lot more from a strategic perspective. So now you're elevating those skills and using them in a little bit more of a dynamic scenario.
So you mentioned going into conversations, having your tool set, like how you're going to say certain things, and having conversations that might be awkward or tougher, and just being prepared. So I'd love to just dive into those. Like, what are some common conversations that might be challenging to have, and how can people become prepared and do those successfully with their reports, or vice versa?
So there are several different types of conversations that you will find yourself in as a manager. It could be a situation where you are trying to change behavior. So you're trying to really provide some coaching on maybe an undesired behavior, or some aspect of a project didn't go well. So now you need to go in and really have that adjustment conversation. Those conversations can be a little bit difficult for lots of different reasons, especially when you have strong relationships with your team, when you're going from a cadence where things are going really smoothly to now having to step back and really provide some directive coaching that is really going to be clear on these are the expectations. I'm really setting the tone for what that conversation is going to be about. and making it very clear that the critique is on the action and the critique is not on the person. Some other types of conversations could be some of those necessary endings where you may have to transition someone off of a project, and really being thoughtful about those conversations as well. And, you know, really focusing on being prepared. I think it's important that when you come into those conversations that you have done some prep work to really frame the conversation in a way that the thing that you're coming to discuss, that you have a very deft hand of that, so that you're able to manage the unknown. Those conversations can go in multiple different directions, and you just want to be able to be clear on the things that you need to communicate during those conversations. And again, the prep work is really key because you want to be thoughtful about when you're having the conversation, where you're having the conversation. Should you be having that conversation alone? Do you need to bring in other stakeholders? And even in those difficult, you know, necessary endings conversations, you also still want to let the person know that they have done good work. The assumption here isn't that it's all bad. It's just that we are at an impasse and, you know, we need to make some shifts. But at the same time, going back to the positive element is that it's about an action and not about the person. Other difficult conversations, really the ability to sort of manage escalations within a company is also going to be key. You need to communicate information to a member of the organization that you don't have direct control over as a manager. Really coming into those situations, again, being very, very prepared, doing the legwork so you kind of like understand the historical knowledge behind the thing. I would say kind of like have your little timeline of events, be thinking about what proposed solutions you want to come to the table with. Thinking about some of those negotiation 101 skills, trying to identify the win-win, and really delivering in a way that's going to resolve the issue but still preserve the relationship.
Again, such practical tips and so helpful.
Yeah. And I think too, Mila, we've talked about this on the podcast, that you can't be prepared for every answer a report might have. Doing your homework so you can answer to the best of your ability and then being like, hey, I don't know, but I'll find out.
I also encourage is that when you walk away from those conversations that you're clear. Like you don't ever, if you're going to have a difficult conversation, you only want to do it once, right? So when you're walking away, you want to make sure you're clear on expectations going forward and that you have buy-in, right? You have buy-in from the parties. Like you're clear on what I'm communicating and also you're clear on the expectations going forward.
So switching gears a little bit. So for Stellar Woman, I know Mila and I are really passionate about elevating female leaders in the field, especially being in two very male-dominated fields and just diversifying the field in general. And I saw on JD Supra, you are one of the authors on an article about the importance of diversifying the legal profession and some of the pitfalls for those that don't make this a priority. So just based on your expertise, like for organizations that aren't making this a priority, what are some of those repercussions? What are they missing out on?
You're really limiting the creativity of your team when you have a mono perspective as it relates to if you only have white males who are of a certain age, they're going to have a very similar experience versus a woman of that age might have a different perspective, or a person of color of that same age might have a different perspective. So like having those diverse voices and experiences at the table definitely elevates and also diversifies the types of suggestions that are really offered to the organization. The other element is retention, right? So if you don't have, if you're not being intentional about the diversifying your organization or being having diversity of thought, there is this sense that you are limiting a employee's ability to sort of grow, right? Because their exposure is also limited because of your limitations. They may not see, they may not feel heard, they may not have mentors that look like them. There may not be this sense that as an organization, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion are at the forefront of how we function in our day-to-day, because we understand that we want to have an inclusion of thought. And so I'm going to seek that out elsewhere for organizations who are being very thoughtful about that. So it can impact retention, and it can also impact your clientele. Clients are being very thoughtful about when they send in RFPs. Like, they want to know, what is the makeup of your organization? Is it representative? Am I going to be working with a diverse group of individuals on the projects and cases that, you know, we might be managing? So there are downstream impacts, and there's also, you know, science and research that shows that it can impact your bottom line as well if you're taking a very narrow perspective of what your workforce looks like.
I love how you were giving practical advice on here. So for listeners out there who might want to diversify, whether it's their teams or their companies, but they just don't know where to start, what advice would you give to them?
There has to be that buy-in from your stakeholders, right? Really having that conversation with your organization about what it means to infuse diversity into your culture. So one of the things that, you know, Legility has done is really taking a stance on forming a task force. So a diversity, equity, and inclusion task force to really understand the landscape of the organization and thinking about what aspects of what is of the company benefit from really taking a closer look at how things are done. So one of the things is that investment. So really investing in a D&I initiative, also putting some financial resources behind that. It's going to be key because they're really, you don't just want another committee, right? You want an action-based organization that's really going to be focusing on delivering for your entire organization, right? So we want to certainly be thoughtful about that from that perspective, and also going out and having a third-party assessment of what your organization looks like. That is something that having that unbiased perspective is going to be key, because I think that naturally we might see that, okay, well, no one may be complaining, so everything might be fine, versus actually getting that pulse from your organization itself and understanding what that really means. Now, for law firms, you know, there are other certifications and programs that are more formal, such as like the Mansfield's Rule. And that's really just providing a framework to allow for all of the different cross sections of diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? So thinking about the organization's makeup and requiring that, whether it's 30% of women or attorneys of color or LGBTQ plus are lawyers within that organization, then extending that further to individuals with disabilities. So really thinking about what structures are already out there to really help provide support. There's also the Diversity Institute, and that is another framework. There's also the Schramm Group, like that is also another organization that really does sort of like help you frame what you need to do to sort of create this blueprint to really boost diversity within your organization. So there is the sort of self-assessment, which I think is really key, but there's also that sort of third-party perspective, and there's so many frameworks that are out there that will allow you to do this in a thoughtful way. So those would be some of the suggestions that I would recommend.
I really like that one nugget about it not just being like another committee, but, you know, having it being people dedicated to action. Because, I mean, people can sit in a room and talk about how great diversity is, you know, all day long, but someone actually has to do something about it.
Right. And having the resources to do something, right?
That's key. One of the things that, you know, when we were starting this process, I met with several consultants and leaders in the space, and that was the resounding sort of feedback. Like, if you're going to do this, make sure that there is that task force is financed, because you want to be able to do actionable things within the organization, right? This is everyone who's participating in this is coming from various parts of the organization. So they're taking time out of how their day-to-day to help with the success of this initiative. And what is an initiative if you don't sort of have goals, milestones that you can sort of really push through and actually kind of have some actionable, tangible things behind it? It's been a very exciting time at Legility, and a very interesting time within our country. I think that a lot of these conversations are certainly at the forefront. Are so many resources that are available to those who are really dedicated to being successful at boosting their diversity initiatives.
I mean, I've definitely said this at least 10 times now, but you've just given such practical, great, tangible advice. And so, Kamaka, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We've really enjoyed chatting with you.
It's been really awesome. So thank you so much for this. This has been the highlight for me. So I want to say thank you. This has been awesome.
It is my highlight as well. And it's me Friday, too. So good vibes. For Stellar Woman, I'm Mary Rectoris.
And I'm Mila Taylor. Signing off.
Yay.